Okay, so welcome to the June meeting of the Interpretations Committee. We're going to open the discussions today, continuing the discussion we started last time on IAS 21. Handing over to Vincent for paper two.
Good morning to everybody. So we'll start today with agenda paper two. So in this paper, we continue the discussion on the exchange rate an entity uses when it translates the results and financial position of a foreign operation into its presentation currency, and the functional currency of the foreign operation is subject to a long-term lack of exchangeability with other currencies. Those circumstances currently exist in Venezuela. We saw the committee's preliminary views on this matter last month. At that meeting, a number of committee members and observers suggested that if the committee were to undertake further work, this should address only the very narrow and extreme circumstances of which we have been informed. Accordingly, we have refined a description of the matter and have specified that the lack of exchangeability to which we referred is one in which the foreign operation has, in effect, been unable to access foreign currencies using a legal exchange mechanism. We provided a summary of the committee's feedback and our analysis of this feedback in paragraph 49 to 89 of the paper. Using the committee's insight, we set out our technical analysis of the matter in paragraph 20 to 48 of the paper. Our analysis is very much based on the definition in IAS 21, and in particular, a spot exchange rate. Or, in our view, whenever an extreme long-term lack of exchangeability arises, as described in the paper, there is no observable exchange rate that meets the definition of a spot exchange rate. Because IAS 21 requires an entity to use a spot exchange rate as the closing rate, an entity estimates the spot exchange rate. Paragraph 66 in the paper summarizes our analysis. I will pause here and ask whether you have any comments or on our analysis, which is question one on page 14 of the paper.
And just before I ask anyone to talk, I think we've got two quite complicated and interconnected things to deal with in respect of this paper. One is the sort of pure technical analysis, if you like, and the other is the what, if anything, should the committee do, or if standard setting was required, or whether we could do an agenda decision. What I'd like to do in the first instance is try and talk purely about the technical analysis in the paper, if that's okay, and then subsequently we'll come on to the second question. And I think, in particular, what we'd be very interested in getting feedback on is the way that the staff have analysed the issue in the paper, which very much focuses in on this definition of what a spot rate is. And so I'd be very interested in particular on observations on the analysis and whether committee members agree with that or not, and obviously other technical points, but just to highlight that sort of, I think, very firm anchor that the staff have taken in terms of the definitions in IAS 21. So with that little spiel, who'd like to kick off with some observations on the technical analysis?
Come on. All right, so
Andrew.
I'll be brave. I'll start off responding to one of your questions that I think it is appropriate to focus on the question of what is a spot rate. The bit, and I'm just going to go in the technical analysis rather than the tentative agenda decision. The bit that made me pause on this one was where I got to paragraph 42, where I found it technically a little bit of a leap to get into 42B that said if you don't have a directly observable spot rate, then you have to estimate it. Because I wasn't sure that I could read IAS 21 as telling that it was required to estimate a spot rate in those circumstances. And, in fact, I just wondered whether if we wanted to have that sort of requirement, we'd need to build that into IAS 21. Because where I think I would go with this is to say that IAS 21 tells me that I need to use a spot rate. However, a spot rate doesn't exist. It simply isn't there, so I have to do something else. And I think that I would turn myself through round into IS 8, where that tells me that if something isn't directly and specifically covered by a standard, I need to go and develop an acceptable accounting policy in accordance with the requirements there. So that was the one bit that made me pause and ponder a little bit, because I thought that I couldn't quite get the staff analysis in IAS 21 and I'd probably need to go elsewhere. I might well end up in a very, very similar answer in the end to where the staff have got with Venezuela, but there are other reasons that I'll come back to in our later discussion and why.
Okay, so if I can just pause there for a second and just react to one point you've made, because, excuse me, it's something we discussed a little bit with the staff yesterday, internally, some of us. So you would agree that what 21 asks you to do is to use a spot rate that has particular characteristics, so it needs to be a rate that's available for immediate delivery. So that aspect of it.
Well, immediate delivery in the context of there might be a delay in you getting it, but something where there's the process for it.
And we don't have an observable rate to choose. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Be interested in others' views on whether we should go out of 21 into 8 and back again, but okay. Bob?
Very similar to Andrew. I agree with the staff's analysis in paragraphs 20 through 40. When I get to paragraph 42, I agree with part A, but then I also struggle. I like the answer of when you don't have a spot rate estimated, but I don't find that in the standard. I'd like to build it into the standard, but I don't see it exactly in there.
Okay. Thank you. Carl?
Thanks. I also agree with staff's analysis. A very similar discomfort, but I would like to highlight that rather than ask for a use of estimate rate, we should state that it's not prohibited to use a spot rate. It makes a big difference.
To use a spot rate or to use an estimate?
To use an estimate as a spot rate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rather than to say you must use, we can say you're not prohibited to estimate a spot rate. Maybe that's where the controversy lies.
Okay. Thank you. Martin?
Yeah, same thoughts as Andrew and Bob. I mean, the standard is not that explicit. From a technical perspective, and you also asked for technical analysis, we go through the agenda decision on page 27 on the headline of the exchange rate at the date of the transaction. It is referred to 39B, and 39B is income and expense. But I guess the same would be valid for balance sheet transactions, if any. So it would be also then 39B. A and not only B.
Yes,
or,
right.
Or was there a specific reason why you only took B?
Just to explain, and you know, maybe there's improvements to make, but the reason we referred into, so we were covering off the balance sheet side under the heading the closing rate that just came above that. So what started on page 26, the closing rate down to that section beforehand. So the idea was that paragraph 35A of IAS 21 was covered in the discussion of the closing rate, and it's just that this little piece that was then covering off talking about the exchange rates at the date of the transaction, we were just highlighting that when that is relevant, and the only time that is relevant is in the context of applying.
The only thing that concerned me is that transaction could also be P&L neutral. So,
Bruce?
Thanks. I'm going to try and restrict my comments to not getting into your second point and what we should do, but I'm in a similar boat to where the others are. I think that from our point of view, the staff view overstepped slightly. What I mean by the overstepped is I agree that, well, to start off with, I think IAS 21 to me doesn't really get us to where we need to get to. So what I mean by that is that we talk a lot about, well, when we have an exchange rate, fine, we're happy. But when we say we don't have an exchange rate, we're then all jumping into the, well, what is the long term? What is this? How do we get to a stage of knowing when? What is immediate delivery? What if there is a first exchange rate after that? What if it comes in 2 weeks, 3 weeks? What if it just happens to be government resets the rates in January every year? And I think to me there's a piece missing there that we would need to try and define in terms of saying when do we say you do not have an exchange rate as defined by IAS 21? Because I think we've got to be certain that in different circumstances, and I think we've got to be very careful, I think I mentioned this last time, that this issue I can guarantee will arise again. This is not unique. It's happened in the past and will most likely happen in the future. So I think we need to ensure that we understand exactly when we have an exchange rate that works under IAS 21 and when we don't have an exchange rate that works under IAS 21. When we don't have the exchange rate, which I think is the Venezuelan situation, I then think we do need another. We need something more. Getting to the estimate, we kind of thought about a bit about the IAS 8. So do we jump to IAS 8? Do we get there, this and that? And I don't really think. I can see how we can get there, but I don't like the way we get there. I like the answer that there needs to be an estimate, and I think that we're comfortable with estimates. We can do the disclosures under IAS 1. We can get into those. I just think that when we're starting to tell people that, by the way, you've got to jump here, 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 and try and jump through hoops to get there, that's the part that, to me, that says my worry is that we're going to end up with diversity all over the place. Because at the moment we're saying, well, effectively IAS 21 does not deal with this. Do I, by analogy, say, well, then IAS 21 just does not apply? I'm an IAS 8. You may think certain aspects apply. He doesn't think certain aspects apply. And before you know it, we've got massive diversity.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple of thoughts. One is I was struggling with maybe the concept that Bruce articulated much better than I was going to attempt to do so. So I agree that I think we need to be clear when there isn't an exchange rate that can be used under IAS 21. I think in Venezuela that probably does exist, even though there are exchange rates through legal mechanisms that may be published, maybe not published. I also agree with some of the things the others have said that you can't get to, what paragraph was it, 42B with IAS 21 the way it is now. I don't see it. So I think that's a problem.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce. You want to ask something. Is it useful to ask it now so people can
respond? Yeah, I want to ask anyway. So for anybody that's able to go through our analysis and get even as far as 42A and saying in the narrow set of circumstances we described, which is, you know, we talk about it where the foreign operation is unable to actually get access to foreign currency. If you're able to agree in that situation with 42A that says we think in that set of circumstances even an official exchange rate wouldn't meet the definition in IAS 21 of a spot exchange rate, I'm just wondering then, what exchange rate do you feel you can get to in the words in IAS 21? And the reason I ask that is, of course, is that, you know, our analysis is based off, 21 doesn't tell you any, it doesn't use the word official, it doesn't use the word observable, it doesn't use the word estimate, as you rightly point out. It just has the definition of a spot exchange rate. So I can kind of understand if you're saying, I'm not sure how I get to 42B based on the words in IAS 21, but then I'm wondering, for example, do you think you'd be able to get to an official exchange rate based on the words in 21? And maybe, if you can, how do you get there?
Knowing that Bonnie has live experience on similar issues, I'll let you back in. Can you put your card back up?
Okay. I think Venezuela's been... It was one of the first topics that I dealt with when I first joined my current company, and it continues to be. So it's an evolution. So I think there's not an exchange rate now because there just isn't any exchange happening. However, a year ago, there was exchange happening, just not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And before that, there was exchange happening, just maybe not at the level and for everyone that wanted to. So to me, this doesn't address, is it available for the entity or for anyone?
Yep.
Because there's a difference. Yep. There's also what, you know, there have been in the past multiple exchange rates, and depending on what industry you're in, if you're healthcare or essential, you get a more favorable versus other non-essential would get a less favorable rate. but it wasn't, and I guess you also have to distinguish, is it for just exchanging cash, or is it for the purpose of getting dividends out? Because, again, that's a disparity as well. And I don't think IS-21 should go into that level of detail, because this perhaps is a unique situation, but there will be other situations, so we've got to provide some sort of framework. I don't know. IS-21, I don't think, tells you when there isn't an exchange rate. You can maybe potentially come to some analysis, but the words don't, I don't think, formally get you there. And I think the way that we've looked at it in the past is there has been an exchange rate. Maybe we weren't able to exchange at that exchange rate, but there was one that existed, and therefore that gives you an indication of what exchange rate to use. So I think there are some pretty tricky questions in there, at least for this specific currency.
I think implicit in the staff analysis, and I'm only adding this in so that others can maybe say whether they agree or not with it, is that if you pick up 21, it just says you have to do this thing, this translation, and you have to do it using a rate that meets this definition. Now, usually that's easy because most markets, it's, you know, you can just easily determine what that is. But I think what the staff are suggesting is that given that 21 says you have to do it, you need to come up with a rate that meets that definition. And their argument, I think, is that in some cases, extreme cases like Venezuela, for example, the only way you could conceivably come up with a rate that meets the definition would be to do a calculation to determine it, because there is nothing you can see in the market, observe, or actually transact at necessarily that would actually achieve the rate other than using estimation. So I think that implicitly is what underlies how you guys got to 42B.
And I think that's right. And I totally understand, Bonnie, what you're saying is over time that has changed. But I suppose what we're trying to do is narrow down the set of circumstances by describing it. And not, you know, I agree there's all kinds of questions out about the tiering, and at what point do you think you've, you know, hit the point where you don't think there's an observable rate. But just based on the facts on the table, which is, at this point in time, using our words, you know, the foreign operation is unable to exchange, that, you know, that's the fact, unable to get access to foreign currencies. IS-21 in that situation still says you need to translate the closing rate, which is the spot exchange rate. What do we think we can get to?
Now, having said all that, of course, there's nothing in 21 specifically that talks about estimation. But I guess on the flip side, one question would be, and I think it's something that the people who spoke first were sort of, I might have read between the lines, and I don't want to put words in their mouths, so if they disagree with what I'm about to say, they should say so, but is if you've got an official rate, for example, that actually isn't a rate available for immediate delivery, as used in the definition, should you not use that rate? And if we were even able to say just that, would that be helpful? Anyway, but we'll move on. So do you want to specifically come back in, Bruce?
I just want to say, just some of the experience we had in Zimbabwe back in the days when we were going through exactly the same issue, there were multiple rates available. I mean, for example, one of them was we had a dual-listed company. It was listed in Johannesburg and in Zim. So as you can see, that the share price move, some people used that. Then there were a lot of companies who borderline went to barter. In other words, the moment they got cash, they would buy hard assets. Cars were very liquid. I know that sounds strange, but they would buy cars and you would, if you need to pay somebody, you'd literally sell the car, deliver the cash, and they'd probably go and buy a car. You know, so it became difficult. But then the third one that I remember caused quite a bit of concern out at the time was the black market rate, which was effectively an illegal rate. But there were probably more transactions happening on the black market than there were. Now, when you look at the definition of a ratio between two currencies, there was genuine commercial, albeit maybe not 100% legal under the regime, but there were commercial transactions taking place. So, you know, you look at these rates, and I mean, they were different enough that it would have caused a problem if you were reporting under it. So, you know, I think it's just that, as we're saying, this is something you've got to be conscious of, that there is not always the exchange rate or no exchange rate. There could be multiple. When you define something as exchange rate between two currencies, then the question's going to come up, well, if I'm using a black market rate, albeit illegal, is that an official exchange rate under IS-21?
Which is why, and even though I told you guys not to peek ahead, I'm now going to break my own rules. It's why all we might be able to do would be to say that if a rate is actually not available to you, you shouldn't be using that rate. Because the more I listen, and there are very valid points being brought up and all of these different issues about does that mean you need to be able to do cash transactions, you know, all of these things, and what if there's multiple rates, which one do I choose? It could very easily turn into Pandora's box in terms of all of the questions we'd have to address if we tried to do something more complete that answered all of these valid questions. And at the back of my mind, I am also a bit worried that we've actually got a situation where people actually need to prepare financial statements dealing with this real live issue, and I think we need to think about timeliness at the back of our minds as well. But with that, nobody else is allowed to peek ahead until we get through the technical. Tony.
So I, like others, I agree that IS21 requires the use of the spot rate. And I agree with the staff's analysis that there might be circumstances in which an entity is unable to observe or transact at something which meets the definition of the spot rate. And I actually thought that the staff analysis did a very good job in response to our previous discussions of narrowing the circumstances, so being very precise about the very narrow range of circumstances for which we are looking for an answer. I also think that the best technical answer is to say, in the absence of something that is observable, that an estimate is required. But like others, I can't see what it is in IS 21 that takes me to that answer. So I actually think it is the best answer, and it's where I would like to get to. But I'm just not sure that at the moment there's enough in IS 21 that somebody could come along and say, pick up what Bruce and Bonnie were saying, well, look, here's a rate that is available to somebody else. So what is it that says I shouldn't use that? And so I just, that's probably where I get to it. The estimation is the answer that I'd like to get to. I think if you were to say estimation, you'd simply say take into account all the relevant information, which might include all of those factors. But just at the moment, I'm just not sure I can see that in 21.
Okay, thank you. Young Su?
What I'm trying to say is, I mean, very similar to what Tony said. First of all, I agree with the staff that, you know, we have to use the spot exchange rate. And also, I think the major characteristic of the spot exchange rate is immediate delivery. I agree with that. But I don't think we can estimate the spot exchange rate as defined in the standard in IAS 21. We cannot estimate any spot exchange rate for immediate delivery. What I meant is that even if we can estimate it, it's not going to be usable in the market. By not usable, what I meant is that no one can exchange the differing currencies at the estimated exchange rate. So by definition of IAS 21, I don't think estimated exchange rate is explained or contained in the standard of IAS 21. So, what I agree with Connie is that estimation might be the right answer. I agree with that. But estimation is not explained clearly in IAS 21. So I don't think a agenda decision is the right way we have to pursue for. Instead, what I think is that we have to go for a standard setting, because estimation is not what is defined as a spot exchange rate for immediate delivery in IAS 21.
Can I just, if it's okay, if I can just ask my question again, or maybe a slightly different question, just if anybody can come back, which is, again, I, as I say, I continue to get all of the explanation as to why you're saying that based on the words in 21, I for all the reasons I think maybe I can't, you know, see estimate in there. But I do repeat, if an entity has to come up with a spot exchange rate, what do you think you can get to in the words in 21? And for example, do you think in the words of 21?
Put it another way, how can you comply with IAS 21 other than estimating the rate and the circumstances?
Yeah, I think that's just that would be very helpful. Thank you.
So I'm coming right after the question. So I agree with the staff analysis mostly. I agree with the conclusion. I think it's practically what effectively we would do.
I'm pretty sure that, like Bruce mentions, I'm pretty sure that it will occur again, and it could come soon in other countries. But I, like others, I totally agree with what the previous comments made. I agree that effectively an estimate is an estimated exchange rate to translate is not clearly written in IS21. And to try to answer your question, Patrina, I'm not sure I've correctly understood it, but I would say a spot exchange rate in IS21, I would apply that as being an observable rate, effectively. So whenever it's not observable, then you're facing an application situation, an application problem, and effectively the best way to proceed then would be effectively to estimate this rate. I don't see any other appropriate solution than estimating when it's not effectively observable.
Just to be clear, do you think you can already get there, applying the words and the standard?
You mean estimate?
Yeah.
You mean it's? I mean,
in order to meet the definition of a spot rate, that's the path that leads you down.
It's what you. Let's put it that way. It's what you. I would do personally, but then if you observe the benchmark you provided us for the March discussion. I think it's the March discussion or the May discussion, I don't remember exactly, but then it was only 20% of the benchmark that did an estimate. So it means that probably it's not clear enough in the standards so that 80% of the benchmark is not estimating spot exchange rate. So it might be worthwhile writing it explicitly if you think it's the proper answer.
Just to point out, not to say I agree with you, Bertrand, in your quote, it's just, I think, important to remember that probably things are changing very quickly there. So I think some of our data points were based on 2016 financial information or first half of 2017. So
Sure. You're right.
I think things are probably moving
right
quite
this.
A lot.
Sorry, Michael, I missed your card because I could only see the white bit.
So, generally, agreeing with the staff analysis and some of the comments that I do think it's a bit of a struggle to get to the estimate as well, simply because 21 seems to be very focused on actual observable rates, and even if you look at paragraph 26, it's been quoted about using the next available rate. It doesn't say to estimate what it might have been before, or it's never based on what it could have been, so I just struggle with that as well. Just one other, perhaps slightly less important on the scope. I was a little confused on what the circumstances were. So paragraph 5 talks about long-term lack of exchangeability and it's so extreme that you can't access foreign currencies. But then when I look at paragraph 40 about long-term lack of exchangeability in Venezuela, it seems to encompass the extremely limited circumstances. So I was a little confused as to what people might do if there's a long-term lack of exchangeability, but it isn't the part C in paragraph 5, that it's so extreme. And are we trying to distinguish two different things there, or is it all part of how we define long-term lack of exchangeability?
I suppose at least what we were aiming at, if you know, I agreed in terms of what we were, you know, thinking the scope of this was, we'd keep it very narrow. So we'd be only addressing circumstances where you also meet that C, where it is the situation that a foreign operation is unable to access foreign currencies. Any of the other situations, which I know are real and happen, sort of mentioned by Bonnie and Bruce, where, you know, things might be a bit less extreme, but there's still some restrictions, we simply wouldn't be talking about those. And
normal,
this. Yes. Yeah, so we wouldn't be dealing with it. Okay. So just one other point, and not to say, only to point out, Michael, if it's helpful, that paragraph 26 of IS21, there's two kind of separate things dealt with in there, and at least it, now written in the context of when there's several exchange rates, there is in paragraph 26 words about when there's several exchange rates, you do pick the rate that could have been settled if those cash flows. So there is a bit of a could have notion in there, obviously in the context of having several exchange rates.
It did exist, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to bring in people who haven't spoken yet and then circle back round. So, John?
I mean, I share the concern of others about 42B. It probably depends what you mean by estimation. I mean, in the absence of this observable spot rate, you're going to apply some other technique to determine the rate, and it might be, as Bruce described in Zimbabwe, you might use other available information to try to ascertain a rate. That could be considered an estimate. I think most people are interpreting estimate as some form of a modelling technique to try and determine a rate, which was, to me, is only one way of determining an estimate. So if you use the word estimate broadly, then I probably would agree with 42B. You do something to determine an estimate. But I'm concerned that 21 doesn't tell you what to do at all, so you've got to do something else. What is that something else? I think the other concern I have is this distinction between a long-term lack of exchangeability that's extreme and one that's not. Because to me, this is a spectrum. I mean, and at what point do you go from it not being extreme? And we're saying there's no guidance for long-term lack of exchangeability that's not extreme. So we're in IS21 with a spot rate. Then we go to no man's land where there's no guidance. And then we say, oh, but now we're back in IS21 when it becomes extreme. And to me, what extreme means, I mean, we can see it in the context of Venezuela, but that's not, there isn't enough robustness around the distinction between extreme and not extreme to make this workable solution for other facts and circumstances, because this is always a spectrum. Okay,
thanks, John. Jim?
I think from a technical point of view, the staff analysis is clear as it could be, because when dealing with local governments or authorities, there's no certainty. We don't even know what they're about to do. So it doesn't matter what kind of rates they gave to the marketplace or to different entities. The more severe the mechanism is, the more rates we could find, depending upon all the reasons Bruce and Bonnie just mentioned. So I think applying IS 21 is the way it should be. Just give some rates or some estimates. For immediate delivery, we are doing this, as Sue just mentioned. The book is due. We have to have some numbers put down so that the group could consolidate. So the immediate delivery is for reporting purpose. It's not, how about we just deliver a dollar worth of assets, or we sell off the whole entity and transfer the whole value outside the country. We're not talking about that. It's immediate delivery, to me, from a practical point of view, it's just for reporting purpose. Just give us some estimate. It better leave that way. The more guidance second part of the question, we may give to the field won't be enough for the complexity of the world. Since I think I see different mechanisms to control the exchange. We don't know what the governments or the authorities may do. So we better leave that way. I think from a technical point of view, it's clear. We have some spot rate for reporting purpose. And if we cannot answer the second part of the question better, we'll leave it like that, since we cannot just lay out all the possibilities the governments or the authorities may do and give them guidelines to this or that complexity. So I think applying IS21, I agree with staff analysis. Just give us some estimates.
Thanks, John. I'm looking around for others who haven't come in yet. Jennifer?
Thanks. I don't know if this is jumping ahead, but just building on the comments that Michael and John made around the notion of extreme. So just, I didn't want to lose the point, because I think similarly, I didn't think that it was clear about what we mean by extreme in the paper. So, for example, I think Bonnie described the situation well, at least as far as I understand it, in Venezuela around, for a particular entity, they may be able to, maybe in prior years they were able to exchange, but not today. But other entities, I'm not sure the situation's that different. If they haven't been able to, you know, exchange currency for several years, for them, maybe it was extreme several years ago, I'm not sure. So I think just the notion of extreme, and just thinking about it from an enforceability perspective, how would we sort of as regulators, you know, try to enforce the idea of extreme? It sounds like it's going to be, or it seems like it will be more dependent on the particular reporting entity and what it's experiencing. So I didn't want to lose that point. I think that's something that would probably need to be clarified. Okay.
Thank you. Now, Reinhardt, you haven't said anything. Do you want to come in?
Sure. Can you hear me well? Okay.
Yep. We can hear you.
Yep.
I mean, my comments are very similar to what others have said, and I think when I listen to the conversation, it's the committee's discussion is in a lot of ways similar to what happened in 2014, which is where the committee decided at that point that IS-21 doesn't provide a clear answer as to what to do when there's a non-temporary lack of exchangeability. And so I think my comments are consistent with what many others have said, which is that if we were to develop some guidance that is broadly applicable to entities in varying circumstances, I think we would need to more carefully define the distinction between a non-temporary lack of exchangeability through the spectrum to extreme. You know, what would one do if there are multiple exchange rates available, and which one would one use in instances like Venezuela where there you aren't able to exchange currencies? What would one do? And as I say, in the case of Venezuela, I don't disagree with the circumstance, with the staff analysis that it would be appropriate to estimate an exchange rate simply because there is no observable spot exchange rate. And so I guess maybe I'm breaking your rule in terms of looking a bit ahead. I think it would be easier for us and also helpful for us to issue an agenda decision that is specific to Venezuela and deal with the particular circumstances in Venezuela, because if we were to do something more broadly, I do think we would have to develop more guidance along the lines of what was discussed, maybe as an interpretation or maybe as a narrow scope amendment to IS-21. So that's my perspective. As I say, with respect to Venezuela, I don't, I don't disagree with the staff analysis. I think estimating is an appropriate way. I think consistent with comments others have made, I'd like to be able to distinguish the current circumstances from the past, given that in the, I think as Bonnie said last year, or certainly a year ago, some companies were using the official exchange rates, and I wouldn't want to suggest that they were doing that in error in their circumstances. So that's my perspective.
Okay. Thank you, Reinhardt. Okay, so people coming in for a second time, and I think that this end of the table were first with their cards up. So, Bonnie?
I think one point that I wanted to make clear, and Reinhardt kind of led into this, is if we say that the analysis in 42B is how IS-21 reads, I think it could call into question conclusions that entities have made in the past. And so I think we need to be a bit careful there. I guess the other thing that we haven't really touched on is disclosure. And I was actually trying to look up to see what we had disclosed, but in the past, because I think when we've had discussions about the rate, which frankly there's even now or in the past, whatever rates there were didn't necessarily give you the right economic picture. So we tried to disclose what our monetary assets and liabilities were, so that if somebody wanted to apply a different rate, they could figure out what the impact was. And then we disclosed what rate we were using. So I think with 42B, I think what troubled me the most was if we're being so definitive about this is how you interpret IS-21, which I don't think you can get there. I think it could call into question what companies have done in the past.
Yeah, and obviously we need to be careful about this because it's a very difficult area. So I don't think we want to come out sounding like, of course it was obvious that this is what you should do. Tony?
I was just going to respond to a question I think that Katrina asked, which is sort of what would you do under IS-21? And I think if you are in a situation in which there is not an observable rate that meets the definition of a closing rate in IS-21, I think if somebody came along and said, well, I'm going to estimate the rate at which I could have transacted, had that rate actually existed, I think that would be acceptable. I think the challenge is that the only acceptable way?
particularly when for short-term map of exchangeability, it says it use the rate at which the first time a rate becomes observable, which is not necessarily the rate at which you could have transacted at balance sheet date. And so if I say, well, 21 doesn't tell me what to do, but for short-term map of exchangeability it does, well, why shouldn't I look to that and say, is there a post-year-end auction that I can use that rate, even if it's not a rate at which I could have transacted, or was there a transaction sometime earlier in the year for this company or another company? Is there enough in 21 to say that, well, actually, that was the wrong answer, and you should have estimated? So I my concern with being this definitive is that I wonder whether 21 would permit alternative answers. And as a matter of fact, people have used alternative answers. So I share Reinhardt and Bonnie's concern that people have looked at this, the absence of guidance, and got to a different spot. So that's why I think I struggle to say that 21 says this is the only way that you can go about coming up with a rate, which is to estimate the rate at which you could have transacted.
Young Su?
I also want to go back to Patrina's question. My answer to that is that we cannot use anything else other than estimation in this situation, because we are talking about the extreme situation. Extreme situation is the situation where we cannot get any exchange rate. So in that situation, I agree with the staff that we have to use the estimation. But what I'm trying to say is that estimation does not give us the exchange rate defined in IAS 21.
Yeah, I understand your point.
So that is just a reasonable rate. So my suggestion is that we have to mend the standard. And one more thing I want to say is that I agree with the other people like John and Jennifer that we have to define extreme situation carefully. One related question to that is, we are talking about extreme situations, but what do we have to do for the less or not extreme situation? If we finalize this urgent decision, we say that the companies can use the estimation in the exchange rate. How about the companies in less or not extreme situations? Are we going to not allow them to use the estimation? Or are they still allowed to use the estimation for the exchange rate? So that's an open question, too.
Okay, thank you. Martin.
Yeah, I wonder whether we fear to use the term liquidity. Because, if we talk about exchangeability from a perspective of each individual entity, it is depending whether there is a sufficient liquidity to exchange the funds. And even if there is an opportunity to exchange, say, 10% or so of the fund, then I would come up to an exchange rate, but this exchange rate is not sufficiently covering my whole exposure. And what companies sometimes in general do is that they try to enter into barter transactions. So if I would be able to do so, I could probably calculate a cross rate, so to say. But also in Venezuela, there is no opportunity to acquire goods for money in a sufficient way. But what is happening for sure, and I'm with Bonnie also from my corporate perspective, is that some entities get specifically designated exchange rates as a promise. But also for that, no exchange happens, and it's a break of promises year by year, yeah. And therefore the aspect of a sufficient liquidity, I guess, it's important from the perspective of an entity to consider what kind of exchange rate you want to use.
Thanks, Matt. Carl.
Yes, picking up about the differentiation of the short-term and long-term lack of exchangeability, I think paragraph 39 gives a very clear definition of that. I like that definition. I think it should clarify the concerns raised on the table. And my second comment is about the concern about previous decisions taken with a different approach, and at the same time we are issuing an agenda decision. It's
it's the very nature of the, this kind of resource. It will not be the first time an agenda decision would create some kind of, this kind of discomfort. And it will not be the last time. It happens. I can't say by myself.
Paul.
I wanted to come back and answer Petrina's question about what our company is doing now. I think it gets back to when you look at the definitions in IS 21, where I don't find it particularly helpful, I don't think it addresses, is the spot rate specific to an entity or is it anybody and at what level? So I think what's happened, and I think Bonnie covered it well in this evolution, some have looked at it as, well, I used to get, so I had a spot exchange rate. Well, then I got limited, so I could only get limited amount. I couldn't get all I wanted, but I used the official rate. And then it was I couldn't get any, but somebody could get some, so I used the official rate. And then, well, hardly anybody could get any, but there still was some transactions, so I'm still using the official rate because it doesn't address when do I switch over from the official rate to an estimate. And I'm sorry, I'm picking ahead. If we want to deal with Venezuela and just say, you know, this is a particular situation, you know, that's fine. But I don't think in 21 there is enough of a framework to be able to say when somebody's supposed to switch from that official rate to an estimate.
Thank you. Andrew, and then I'll try and move us to the next section and sort of make a few observations.
Sure. There's some consistency, I think, in my comments. I'm a bit worried about the spectrum that we're looking at. I think that if I look at Venezuela in isolation, then I can get quite comfortable with where we end up here. The trouble is if it's less extreme. So if I go back to Venezuela a couple of years ago, then I could have had three different rates, which might or might not have been available to me, depending on what kind of transaction I had and what sort of arrangement I had. There might also have been some sort of exchange rate that I thought was coming down the line that might be available to me in 9 months' time because the government is busy reintroducing something. So I think it's very difficult for us to be specific. And I must confess, when I read paragraph 39, I felt a bit of discomfort in that because I thought it was a bit too definitive. Because you see that depending on your circumstances, in Venezuela a few years ago or other countries that I can see in practice at the moment, that might say, well, actually, you've made an error. I just wonder whether we can do that. I don't think IS 21 is absolutely as clean as that. And that's why I think that if we're going to say something that is not just Venezuela, we need to have something which says you need to apply some judgment. Because, as I think Reinhardt said, I would be a little bit hesitant to say to an entity that had used an official exchange rate in a previous period, say, well, actually, we think that that was wrong, that you should have done something different for something which is extreme, but not as extreme as Venezuela. And that takes me back to the spectrum point. So I think we just need to be very, very careful in exactly what we say. And maybe when we get onto the agenda decision, we can talk a bit about whether we restrict it just to Venezuela in Venezuela's specific circumstances, or whether we have something which goes a bit more widely.
Okay, so having listened to that, I'll make a few observations, and then, Von Sund, if you've got more you want to add before I hand back to the committee, just let me know. So I think that this issue is both technically interesting, but also I think it's very interesting for the committee in the sense that it's a very good test for us of when we should and shouldn't use agenda decisions, because I think agenda decisions the committee's been using very well, and generally the feedback I get from people is that the new approach we're taking to try and be more informative with the agenda decisions is helpful. But I think we've got a very strong obligation as committee members to use that power, if you like, wisely and carefully so that we can continue to use them. So I think that the sort of questions that committee members are raising about just how much you can read in 21 and what you can't read in 21, even if we might like the outcome, are exactly the sort of questions we should be asking as committee members, because the first decision you guys need to make is whether we need to do standard setting or not, and then what form of action we take. So listening to the conversation, I think there might be a few different ways that the committee might approach this, and I personally don't have very strong views on what the right approach is for once in my life on this, so I'll just send you out, sort of set out what I could see as a spectrum of different things that the committee might want to think about and talk about, which is a little bit broader than what the proposed staff recommendation is in the agenda decision, because I think you've raised some very interesting points in terms of lots of questions that come up, and I think we need to perhaps have two things in mind. One is the timeliness of trying to do something to help both preparers and people helping preparers to decide what they do in the very sort of time critical questions they're going to have about what we do about Venezuela next when we're next reporting. But then there's inevitably going to be situations in the future where similar questions are going to come up, and it might be helpful to have more guidance then, and we're trying to balance those two things. So I think what we could think about doing would be to do an agenda decision which is narrower than what was proposed in the staff paper, which might be just to comment on the Venezuelan fact pattern as it is now, and to make a comment about the appropriateness of using an observable rate if it's not a rate that for the entity is available for them for immediate delivery. So basically opining on the use of observable rates that you can't actually use as a reporting entity. All that would be doing would be opining on don't just use an observable rate, and we wouldn't then be telling them what to do instead, although the implication would probably be then they'd need to do estimation, but we wouldn't be opining on that per se, so it would be a narrower focus. Now, I think one of the advantages of doing it that way would be it would be timely for people in terms of their reporting. I think it also reduces the risks that some of you have raised about people being second-guessed and being told they've done something bad in the past, because it would be narrowing in on the very specific and unusual, hopefully, fact pattern we've got at the moment in Venezuela, so it would be very focused, but it wouldn't be helping on the broader question. So we could stop at that, or I think the committee could do that, and in addition we could think about whether we needed to do some standard setting that would then talk about circumstances where you didn't have an observable rate that met the definition of a spot rate, and how people might go about, well, firstly, officially blessing the use of estimates, and then perhaps talking a bit about how to go through the estimation process, using that term broadly the way that I think John and Tony have been using that term. And we could usefully make some observations there about maximising the use of observable inputs and all of that sort of stuff, and that would be, I think, a useful addition to the gaps that we've got in 21 today. But I guess my caution there is you've asked lots of valid questions on that. That could become quite a big deal quite quickly, I think. But it is one thing we could do in addition to or instead of the narrower agenda decision. Or we could continue to look at a broader agenda decision along the lines of what the staff have set out as the appendix to the agenda paper. But again, we'd need to be confident as a committee that we felt that that was truly in the nature of an agenda decision and not going further than what the standard can support. Mary, did you want to add?
I wanted to just check something that you said and then maybe add. The thing that I wanted to check is, at least in one point in your initial comment, you used the word observable when I think I would have expected you to say official, because I think, I was flipping through the paper and trying to think about the previous discussions, and I think at the heart of this is the question of, does IS-21 require use of the official exchange rate? And I think the answer, and I heard most people when they were talking about being comfortable through paragraph 42A of this paper, saying that they agreed with the staff analysis that official is not the test, but rather it's the definition of closing, which references spot rate and has availability for transactions. And maybe just pointing people to that very basic, it's right in the standard, is itself a very useful reminder to bring improved consistency in the analysis. And I did want to catch up because I
consciously used the word observable only because I think definitely in the Venezuelan case, from what I understand it, for most entities, and I think there could be exceptions in the medical industry and things like that, that one question is the official rate, but also I don't think people should be using a rate that maybe somebody's been able to transact a tiny amount, but it's not available to that entity. So I was intentionally using it slightly broader for that reason, but that's a question for the committee.
Yeah. Because I think it is, it could be very also very useful to ensure that there's an explicit discussion here and then think about whether or not it's appropriate to capture about whether this is a condition of the market or an analysis that's specific to the entity and the entity's accessibility, which may vary by entity. And then I did separately have a comment about whether the context in which I think the committee should be considering whether or not to provide guidance in light of, you know, that goes beyond any agenda decision. You know, in 2014, the committee said too broad, and that was prior to the board's agenda consultation in 2015. In 2015, the board said we're not adding, you know, IS 21, although we know that there are some practice questions, we're not adding a project. To me, implicitly, that was a decision not to add a reconsideration of IS 21 and its requirements, you know, more broadly. I think then the question becomes for the committee, in the context of the existing structure and requirements of IS 21, is there something that you think there it would be useful to develop? Not saying if we were throwing out IS 21 and starting with a clean sheet of paper, but rather in the context of IS 21, is it worth investing in providing application guidance about this standard?
And I was thinking very specifically if we were to do something along that track, just focusing in on this estimation and how you go about it issue, which is, I think, relatively focused in the scheme of all potential 21 projects, but still could run away with us. Okay.
So. May I ask you a question, Sue?
Sure.
If I correctly understood what you've just said, you proposed two alternatives. You do not consider a third one, which could be to go directly for standard setting without doing any agenda decision for Venezuela.
I meant to say and or. So we could go straight to standard setting if we thought we needed it, but I guess that's where I might have one slight personal preference, which is I think we do need to think about timeliness. Bruce.
Thank you. My two comments. Firstly, in this situation, I believe we have to do some degree of standard setting. I mean, I think the view unanimously, almost around the table, has been, well, almost unanimously, has been that we don't believe IS 21 gets us to where we need to be. I do accept what you're saying, that would be need to be very narrow. I think if we start getting into the nuances of how you establish exchange rates, we could find this is another insurance project that we'll never see. on the second one, on the agenda decision, I accept that obviously in Venezuela there is a challenge. As I said, it's not a new challenge, but it is a challenge that exists at the moment. I guess the question I would ask, and I'd be interested to hear from those who are maybe more affected by it, is if we came out with an agenda decision that just really kind of was along the lines of what Sue said, would that help?
Is it helpful or unhelpful?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because we haven't kind of gone all the way to saying using an estimate, is it going to help or not?
And so, I meant to say that. I actually wrote down helpful or not. Because is it unhelpful to say you can't use this rate and then not tell
and
you
not,
what
that, you that's exactly it, sir.
Right.
And just very quickly, one is I think if we do nothing now in terms of not issuing an agenda decision, for the first half reporting or second quarter reporting, as the case may be, company is going to be doing what they did for year-end close. It's however they got the rate, whether it's the official rate, the estimated rate, the black mark rate, whatever they did then is what they're going to do now, absent a reason, us given reason, or the requirement to do something different. Now, we may think that's a good thing or might think it's a bad thing, but I think it's what's going to happen. Two, in terms of exchange rates and reflecting on some of the comments, there's, I think, the fact that somebody else might have the rate, I think you got to start thinking of there's a rate for importing essential goods, and there's a rate, and they don't mind you necessarily paying for that. There's a rate for importing, rate for everything else. That's bringing goods into the system. If it's just a dividend rate to take cash out of the system, it's an entirely different story, and that's where you start getting into how do you translate non-trading obligations and assets, and I think that gets a lot more problematic to move your whole balance sheet outside of the system. And it, I think although there's black market rates, I think they're not necessarily illegal if they're outside of the country. Inside the country might be very problematic, but there's currency brokers all over the world that for a price you can have an exchange. And certainly in Miami, I know for a fact that there are, it's dealt with them, but for the Caribbean and the Latin American countries, it's perfectly legal. Just a little market. Yep.
Thank you. Bertrand.
Like Bruce, I think that we should do some form of standard setting, for sure. Then I like the idea of doing an agenda decision narrowed to the case in Venezuela for the sake of timeliness, and then at the same time trying to achieve something in terms of standard setting. At the same time, when we discussed that, when I discussed that in France, the fancy meeting, effectively, people reacted rather negatively on this idea. And the reason why they reacted negatively is they asked two questions. What about a practical application? For the case of Venezuela, would an agenda decision provide for practical application? Some members raised concern about that. What is exact? What we should be doing in that situation? So I think it's a fair question. And the second question they've raised is, what about transition requirements for those who are not doing an estimate previously? So I think, I'm not 100% sure of what we should do. For sure we should do standard setting. Then should we do some first an agenda decision to answer the specific question relating to Venezuela? Maybe, but then effectively it brings it raises additional questions in terms of application and transition requirements, or should we do just directly a standard setting? And then the second question would be then what form this standard setting should take. But for sure we should do standard setting because the issue has existed previously for Zimbabwe. We talked that, about that in March. It exists now in Venezuela, and it will exist in some years' time in the future for other countries. So we need to fix it for sure.
We're trying just to let you know when you bring up a transition, at least, or thinking if anybody were to change how they think about calculating the exchange rate, that would meet the definition of a change in accounting estimate. It wouldn't be in a change in accounting policy because they'd still be applying the spot exchange rate. They just might be, you know, depending on the circumstances, using different mechanics.
John?
I think standard setting is required, but I sort of, I'm wary of how difficult that's going to be because there's going to be a whole lot of situations about different circumstances. What about unofficial rates? What about multiple rates? So it seems to me like keeping it narrow is going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
But I do think if you want to resolve this issue, I think standard setting is required. I'm not supportive of an agenda decision just on Venezuela because I think everybody would accept Venezuela is extreme, but that's, people are going to say, well, at what point did it become extreme? And if we believe that, do we believe the standards contain sufficient guidance for dealing with the Venezuela situation? I mean, I don't think it does, although most people would say, well, there's nothing else you can do except use some form of estimation technique. But without being able to anchor that in guidance that exists in the standard, I think we run the risk that lots of people are going to say, well, how do you make that conclusion for Venezuela? How do I use that as any type of framework for a decision about any other jurisdiction? So I don't think you can just do a here and now agenda decision that says, based on where Venezuela's at now, we think this is how you would apply 21 without anchoring that in some in some guidance that you draw from the standard, and I don't see how you draw that guidance without dealing with this issue about the spectrum and when it had become extreme. So I'm not supportive of an agenda decision because I think it will raise more questions for other situations than it will actually answer.
And you think that's the case even if we were able to craft an agenda decision that focuses on the very particular extreme circumstances in Venezuela and say because of those extreme circumstances the official exchange rate does not meet the definition of a spot rate? And I agree with you, it doesn't help anybody else, but at least it gives you clarity on that one point for Venezuela.
But I think it will raise the question for everybody else of when is the official rate, not the spot rate. And it also raises questions about do we believe the rate has to be observable or do we believe it's... You can have an official rate that's not observable and you can have observable rates that are not official. Neither of those terms is used in IAS 21. So which one... And that's why some people have still defaulted to the official rates because they've said, well, what else is the spot rate other than the rate that's officially announced by the government? Now, I know the paper makes a very good analysis of why it should be the rate that's available for immediate delivery, and if it's not available, then you have to go to something else. But that's not how other people have read the standard in different ways in the absence of guidance.
But that's what the words say, right? And this is where I get a bit anxious because even though I understand people have done practical things to, because they have to do practical things to prepare their financial statements, at the end of the day, we need to apply the words in the standard, and that has a particular definition of a spot rate that talks about it being available for immediate delivery.
And the only question I might have for you, John, is that, don't get me wrong, I agree, I know that for other situations there'll be all kinds of questions and when does it meet or not, but I suppose the question will be, do you think doing a very narrowly focused agenda decision along the lines of what Sue described that would give an answer for the here and now in Venezuela, would that create bigger questions? Because those questions are going to be there already. So I think the question for you is, do you think doing that, that would at least give an answer for Venezuela, make it worse for the other situations? Because surely that question exists for the other situations anyway.
Well, I think it doesn't... I mean, you can give an answer in Venezuela today, and I'm not aware of any other jurisdiction that has the same set of circumstances. But I think giving an answer or implying or stating that IAS 21 provides an answer for how you would address Venezuela begs the question about, well, does IAS 21 provide answers for other jurisdictions, which may not be so extreme, because we haven't defined what extreme is. We've sort of said extreme is Venezuela. We can see it, but we haven't actually defined when it exists and when it doesn't exist. So without doing some... if we believe IAS 21 provides guidance for a situation where it's extreme lack of exchangeability, but not for guidance where it's not so extreme, we need to define what extreme and not so extreme are. And that's we haven't done that. We know it when we see it. What about the whole spectrum? Let's look at different scenarios and decide whether those are extreme or not extreme.
Are you saying then, John, that you think the description at the start of the agenda decision where we've got an A, B and C, I agree A doesn't run out, but the B and C that both says, look, this is not what IAS 26 designs as temporary and therefore we're talking about situations where, exchangeability hasn't been restored, plus we're talking about situations where the foreign operation has been unable to access foreign currency. Is that not enough for you in terms of a distinguishing line?
I think the complexity of these situations when they arise, I don't think that's necessarily going to be capable of being... to me, that doesn't... that works as it's written for Venezuela, but if I try to apply that to other situations or I try to apply it historically to the evolution of the Venezuelan situation, I'm not sure at what point I would have said you would have crossed over. And I think it probably also relates back to this issue about individual entities cross over that boundary at different times because of their different access to currencies. And that's not dealt with in 21 as to whether long-term lack of exchangeability is an entity determines that for itself or whether it actually exists for a currency itself.
I can see us fast ending up in a situation where we'll tell ourselves there's so many questions we won't even be able to get standard setting to work. Mm. And I'm a bit worried we're not going to be very helpful to the market. But anyway, Jim.
I agree with John's comment. I'm also worried about giving specific answers back to whoever is sending these messages. Because, first of all, I don't know. As an international organization, should we give specific guidelines to a country? Would that be a kind of a bias or a discrimination against that country or so? I don't know. Just an open question. It's too specific. We mentioned this country's name many times, but we were supposed to cover the globe, not a particular country. But anyhow, even though we, for example, we're all hired by the company to do his book, we're going to give him a rate. But it's going to do no good for anybody else because, as many of us just mentioned, the situation is so unique and different rates and practices out there, and someone could get official rate if they are in particular industry or they just know someone with the government. That could happen. We all know that. And some other companies will never get any rates or any kind of practical exchanges. So it won't help. And by giving this specific answer, we trigger all the other guys' concern. What if we get this rate from the government? We don't know how, but they just got that. Different from the guidelines we just answered. So we all know this situation is so very different and unique. So I don't think giving specific answers back will be very helpful. And it will trigger massive questions, even within the country, not even thinking about the standard setting. And the second part, I'm also worried about the standard setting approach, because as all of us just mentioned, the situation is not benign. Most of the times, this situation is generated by political reasons. This morning, we all see Donald Trump shake hands with Xi Jinping. What if that country opens up? Should we expect they open up economic environment markets completely? No, they're going to have layers of controls. So the Venezuela situation will be global, like Bruce mentioned. Happened somewhere in Africa, happened in Asia, and it will keep happening. And it's more political than economic. So I think leaving the IS-21 the way it is and give the field, the accountants, and the local authorities some room to work. So we just cannot list all the possibilities. So it will be a very difficult task if we open up the initiative to be a center setting. So I think I probably will just leave it the way that is.
And I agree with all of your cautions in there. But I think at its very, very, very most basic level, cutting through all of the, permutations and good questions everybody has raised, we might have a situation at the moment, well, I think we do have a situation at the moment where we've got at least some people applying IAS-21 who might think they're required to use the official exchange rate, even where that comes out with pretty nonsensical accounting outcomes.
I think the staff analysis and maybe the later, if we decide not to add, we'll give some guidelines, some wording, some educative wording out there so that they know it's not the official, it's some estimates.
I don't think a staff paper in itself, as much as I'd love us to have that much information,
right.
I'm not sure a staff paper in itself really gets us there, and rightly so, because of our due process, but I'm not sure we can rely on that. Mikhail?
I'm very much in line with the later speakers, I think. The question, I mean, we have a problem, that is for sure, but the question is if this problem is not very isolated to these specific circumstances, these specific countries. And the question is if we should solve that with standard setting or other things, because we have already mechanisms in the standards, meaning that we have the IS-8, then, for instance, to apply if we do not have rules of this. Possible to apply in this specific situation. So I think that the agenda decision, I think, will make more harm than help. And I don't think that we should have any standard setting activities either when you have, I mean, this works in 99.9999% of the cases. And then to do this kind of activities for such specific situation, I do not think that is a good thing. I mean, we should work with principle-based standards, and then you have different situations, and you have to apply that thing in those circumstances.
But I do go back to the fact that we're told that some companies think they have to use the official exchange rate, and they're saying they're getting nonsensical results because that's what IFRS was requiring them to do. Bonnie?
This is for sure a challenging one. I think one of the things that I considered is what we said back in 2014, because this was an issue back in 2014. So 4 years ago, we were dealing with a similar question. Perhaps the facts were slightly different in terms of the level of exchangeability, but we said back then that the longer-term lack of exchangeability is not addressed in the guidance in IAS 21. I still believe that to be the case. So I think that's important for us to say, unless we think differently now. But
Certainly not specifically addressed.
Yeah. I think if we are going to write an agenda decision, I think it should be very specific to Venezuela. I think we should be clear about what IAS 21 does say and what it does not say. I think that perhaps we can leverage what we did back in 2014, because I think that still applies. I don't know that IAS 21 gives you specific guidance in this particular situation. It doesn't define when there is a long-term lack of exchangeability. It doesn't define extreme. It does tell you to use a closing spot rate. But perhaps we can go back to something that Andrew said at the very beginning, which is if you don't have a closing spot rate for immediate delivery for the entity or for the exchange rate itself, perhaps then you refer to IAS 8, because there is something in IAS 8 paragraph 10 that talks about, and that maybe can get you to the estimation. But I think even more important are the disclosure requirements that we listed back in 2014. If we are to undertake standard setting, I think it should cover kind of a framework of when is there long-term lack of exchangeability and what do you do in those situations. We could perhaps look to IAS 29, the framework of when you determine something's hyperinflationary, because I could see some similarity of hyperinflation. I know they're different concepts, but long-term lack of exchangeability, I think we could come up with some characteristics. So if we're going to do an agenda decision, which I agree with the risks that have been laid out by some of the others, because they're very real risks, I also agree with Gary that if we don't say anything, people are going to continue to use the same judgment that they had been applying in the past. But if the committee decides to do something, I think it should be very, very specific. And if we are going to do something on standard setting, perhaps we could look to IAS 29 in terms of defining a framework to apply for this situation, as well as there will inevitably be other situations.
Okay, thank you. Just one thought, and I'll throw this out here in case you want to react to it, Tony. Just reflecting on some of the comments that people have made about how far we can or should go in terms of what 21 says, I wonder whether it would be helpful if we were to say, rather than saying it doesn't meet the definition of a spot rate, therefore you must not use it, that 21 does not require the use of an official rate if it does not meet the definition of blah blah. Tony?
Which was kind of a suggestion.
It is obviously a challenging situation in Venezuela, and it's going to happen again. And when it happens, it's urgent, and when it happens, it's really difficult, given due process and everything else, to address it. And the next time, it might be a large country rather than a relatively small country. So I'm not sure that just saying this is all too hard is a good answer. I do think standard setting is needed to address the question for all the reasons that everybody has said. I think it should be as narrowly focused as it can be, but I think it does need to address the spectrum that John talked about, and then what the accounting, so what the approach is, without necessarily telling people exactly what they've got to do, because there is always going to be an element of judgment in terms of determining where you are on the spectrum and how you make your estimates. So I do think that standard setting is required. Then thinking about the agenda decision, I roll back to the question that was troubling people is, as you said, are they required to use the official rate? Because I think there has been a perception that the an official rate was required. And so what I was going to say, and it's helpful you've kind of teed me up to say it, is there a way of addressing that with an agenda decision? I probably wouldn't make it specific to Venezuela, but try and make it specific to the facts in Venezuela so that it does have slightly broader applicability if there happens to be another one shortly. But at least say something that isn't saying, well, this is what you've got to do, but it gives people a hint that it is acceptable to estimate the exchange rate. Now, some people have got there at the moment and some people are continuing to use. So if we do build on what we said in 2014, but then, as you suggested, make it clear that you're not necessarily required to use. And I think that will be a helpful way forward.
Okay, thank you. Young Su?
I just want to concur with the Jim and John, that narrowing down the agenda decision further into only the Venezuela would not be a good answer for many regions. In addition to what they say, I should add one thing. The one thing I want to say is the criteria. One of the criteria we are using is widespread of the issues. And if we just restrict our issue only to the Venezuela, that's against the criteria we have. So I agree with the other people that we have issue. I mean, we have to deal with the standard setting instead of the gender decision. For that, I think what we can do is not that difficult. As Sue, you said, we can first point out that legal rate is not always a spot rate in the standard setting. And also we can say sometimes the estimation can be used, especially in the extreme situation, even though we have to define what is the extreme situation. I think what is written in the agenda decision as the extreme situation is not that clear. The Katrina says something about the paragraphs in the agenda decision, especially the paragraph C. But I think something like the description in paragraph C can be observed, not in the extreme situation, but also in less extreme or not extreme situation. So that we should be careful about what is the definition of extreme situation. But if we do that, the issuing the narrow scope amendment of the standard would not be that difficult.
Thank you. Sandy?
Yeah, I waited until we got to question two, but I don't know we're getting to question two if it's all intermingled. I guess, I get the desire to answer the question technically. I don't know how you estimate the spot rate. I just don't really know how you actually do that. But we seem to be talking about, I get that some people think that maybe you have to use the government's rate. But in the people who are doing that, are they actually disclosing that? And to what degree of disclosures are they actually making? Because we're talking about the consequences of, was this an error, and what will, if we write something, will companies change? But the real question is, what do investors know about this already, right, from the particular companies? Because I don't know that we're going to come to an answer. And I get that preparers have to make a decision, but investors have to make a decision too. And it's a real money on the table type of decision. And I look at the disclosure requirements, am I going to give the estimated spot rate? Am I going to give the assets, the liabilities, the net assets, the cash? How am I going to make a decision about whether I think this thing is worth anything? right? And I get that's an economic question, not the accounting question, but ultimately that's the point of these financial statements and the point of this disclosure. So my question is, for the people who think you have to use this other rate, what have they disclosed so far? And what's the consequence of them then saying, okay, well, now I can use an estimated rate, and what then will they disclose? Because I don't know what I'm going to see of that decision. And that is ultimately the important question, because a long-term lack of exchangeability, I don't even know if people are going to use that word in the financial statements, but an investor sees a long-term lack of exchangeability and they're going to think impairment. And are they impairing these, and do they have enough information to make that decision? So I sort of say, well, we can have these interesting questions and we can debate them, but what am I seeing today? And I can't look at all the IFRS financial statements, for example, in Europe at once. I can look easily in the U.S., and I can pull up in 30 seconds what everybody said about Venezuela. But I can't do that for in Europe, for example. And so what I'm struggling with is, even if we decide this, what am I going to see? And I get that some of these disclosure requirements are there, but what am I seeing now? What's going to change?
Most companies that are affected have made relatively extensive disclosures, explain the rate that they've used, what they've done with it, and they've disclosed the impact on profit or loss and on the balance sheet. So it varies in the level of detail, but most people have explained relatively clearly what they have done. Certainly those that have moved to estimating the exchange rate have explained what they've done. Companies that have used an official have explained the potential consequences that is not the rate at which they would expect to be able to repatriate cash or actually realize their assets in Venezuela.
But they're giving the impact on the income statement, and are they giving the net assets and the cash sitting in that country?
For the most part.
So
I'm not going to say everybody does that, but certainly the ones that I have seen have been reasonably extensive.
And sometimes you provide also a sensitivity analysis when the impact is significant to give the magnitude of the risks that you may encounter. So I think, yeah, the disclosures generally are quite extensive and consistent in Europe. Yeah, sure.
So then the consequence of the decision is that they'll now say these numbers are a slightly different number. I'm just saying, what is the consequence? If they've made these wonderful disclosures, then the consequence to investors should really be nothing. They've made their own decision about how they adjust the numbers. Because they will have taken and said, this is the net assets, and I don't know that I'm ever going to get it, and I'm going to adjust the value. I'm going to take the money out of cash. You know, they're going to make those decisions. And so this decision is only going to change that wonderful disclosure that exists, right?
For those who think that they have to use the official exchange rate at the moment, I think their actual reported figures
changed dramatically.
Quite different.
Their reported figures where? On the base
balance sheet and on the income statement.
Right, but in the footnote, are they then giving the entirety of the balance sheet and income statement for this subsidiary?
No.
Only some of them do that.
Some of them do, but not all of them. So that ultimately is my question, because what's the analytical response to this by investors in these companies that don't have these disclosures? That's ultimately, if I was a company, that's what I would care about, because that's where a class action suit might come.
But I think that the concern, from what I understand it, and please, those who are more closely involved, chip in, people are concerned that the numbers that some of them think that they're required to provide at the moment are based on exchange rates and a combination of exchange rate and inflation that gives not a representationally faithful, I guess, in their mind's view of things.
But and actually almost forces them to explain.
In the financial statement.
Forces them to overstate assets, overstate cash balances, because they don't think they can ever get access to it. But they think the requirements force them into a situation of reporting numbers that are meaningless and they can't get access
to. And they're not referencing that in the footnote, and they're not making non-GAAP or non-IFRS adjustments for that?
They may well be explaining the effects in the notes because they don't like it, but I don't think we think that's a substitute for getting the accounting right in the first instance if we think that it would be better to use a different...
Right. I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying that even if we take that decision or it's a long time in coming, the question is, does the market have the information, right?
Because the issue here is that the spot rate defined by the IAS 21 is not the real spot rate in Venezuela.
I totally get it.
So the companies are trying to use accounting, following accounting rules. So if they are using some non-spot exchange rate in their financial statements,
no, I get that.
Pay people say that's a violation of accounting. So they're asking us what is the proper exchange rate.
But we're talking about how hard and difficult it may be to do standard setting, right? So in absence of that, what are people left to do? I get that we're talking about preparers, but what are investors left to do, right? And I totally get it. I don't think that IS 21... I think you have that. There's not a spot rate, and I don't know how you estimate the spot rate, and I don't know how you write language to make that happen. I don't know how you write language to make that happen for investors. So I don't know.
Okay, so you're saying at a minimum, let's make sure the disclosure means investors are equipped to make adjustments.
Exactly. I agree that the standard doesn't say that, and I agree that assets may be overstated. But in the end game of this, if we're trying to be helpful, the question is there enough for management to protect itself from investors who say you didn't inform me, and for investors to make a reasonable decision in absence of standard setting. And I looked at the disclosures, and I don't see that there's actually a requirement to do that. So, and I don't have the ability to look at all of the companies with Venezuelan operations and make that assessment easily in other places. So,
I guess in the end, it's the... There are some companies that make comprehensive disclosures, others less so. But to the extent that the impact is potentially material, I think folks have explained what they have done, why they have done it. But in the end, I think it's a question of having an extensive disclosure in the footnotes is not a substitute for getting the underlying accounting right in the first place. And I think the problem is that using...
You're preaching to the conversion
rate
that,
in this situation.
I thought what you were saying, Sandy, not putting words in your mouth, was if it's really difficult to come up with a standard setting solution, at a minimum we should make sure there's enough information in the hand of investors that they can understand.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, we sometimes get in what seemingly feel like prisoner's dilemmas, and ultimately management has to take a decision. You have to give them room to make a decision. And investors ultimately have to make a decision because they're going to say it's not worth this much, right? It's not just how I wrote it down on a piece of paper. It's how I trade on something or I don't trade on it or say what it's worth. And so I never believe that disclosure is a substitute for good accounting. But I don't know how we get there in an efficient way. And I think that if it's material, a lot of people have already taken the decision about what they're going to do with it, or investors have. So,
okay. So Mary, tell us how we're going to deal with it in an efficient way.
I've been accruing notes as I've listened to the discussion. First point is, as a board observer, I think I would offer some comment, some concern about doing something I see we did in 2014, which says, in Venezuela, ... I can see limiting comments to in the circumstances and describe those that exist in Venezuela. But, I think this committee, forget about this specific issue, this committee should not become the mechanism for country-specific one-off decisions, or you'll find yourself doing an annual review of which countries are hyperinflationary. As an example of future tasks to take on. So I think there's no problem with describing a very specific set of circumstances, but I caution against using the name.
Yes.
Second, I think I had some hesitation about going back to the idea of just commenting about what's not required, because I think there is a very explicit requirement in IS 21 that it might be helpful to refocus everybody on. And if you look at the draft agenda decision on pages 26 and 27, it starts about two-thirds of the way down page 26 and goes just through the the end of the first, you know, the incomplete paragraph at the top of 27, which is an entity translates the results and financial position, translates A, B, you know, A and B, and then says the closing rate is the spot exchange rate, and through exchange mechanism at the end of the reporting period. Sorry, there was a lot of dot, dot, dots in what I just said. But what I'm trying to get to is that in terms of what IS 21 provides sufficient guidance for, I think it is that IS 21 provides sufficient guidance to determine whether the exchange rate meets the requirements for closing rate for use of, you know, of translation. I don't know that you guys have to weigh in as to whether in a particular country it does or does not, but I think it's clear. 21 is clear about what the requirement is, closing rate. And John, something you'd said before, and sorry I'm picking on you, was, you know, 21 may say this, but people have, you know, kind of developed what they've done. I think we have to remind them to go back and look at, you know, look at this requirement, because that's what's in IS 21 today. The third thing I've heard, and this is Sandy's point about reminding people that in light of the difficulties when you get in extreme cases of long-term lack of exchangeability, it is important for investors to be able to understand what the rate used was and what the impact is on the financial statements and ensuring that there's adequate disclosure. And then the fourth thing is, I've heard mixed views from committee members about whether or not you should try and do some follow-up standard setting to say, what do you do if there is no observable rate? And I've heard some, you know, caution, starting with Sue when she asked people what they thought about that. You know, I think Jim and Mikhail, you also had some concern about whether you opened this box, whether it was possible. I think it would be fair for the committee to say, you know, having identified this issue, ask the staff to research and come back whether or not there's a project that is sufficiently focused that it would be worth the committee undertaking, you know, attempting to undertake interpretation or standard setting of 21 without committing today that you are or are not going to do it, because I think until you see what the scope is and what, yep, you know, the list of issues is, it would be difficult for you guys to make a decision about follow-up standard setting. But I think the narrowest possible thing is something that is straight out of IS 21 in terms of reminding people what the requirements are for the rate that has to be used. And if you're facing long-term lack of exchangeability, that you have to assess whether the rate you're using meets these requirements or not. So, hope I lived up to expectation.
Always, Mary, always. So Mary's lifting the bar again and seeing if we can get people to agree to words along the lines of what's at the bottom of page 26 and the top of 27, which is reminding people that 21 requires you use a rate that meets these particular definitions, which would be nice if we could get there. And also I would agree with Mary wholeheartedly that my intention, and I didn't say it, so it's useful to say it explicitly, is that if the committee did want us to explore standard setting, I think that I had envisaged that would be, in the first instance, staff going away and thinking about how we might scope that in a sort of digestible and manageable amount that would then come back and consider specifically, rather than agreeing, you know, with no boundaries today, that we're going to go down that path. Carl?
Yes. Given the urgency, I would support an agenda decision this wide. I would not narrow specifically to Venezuela. And I think we have a good set of facts, and IS 21 is sufficiently helpful to address the situation. I would not object to some standard setting activity, but it's a very long-term action. So I think we should go ahead with an agenda decision similar to that. In the second paragraph of page 27, the second last sentence, the committee concluded that the entity estimates, I would use can estimate or could estimate. I think the problem would be solved, reasonably solved, with this word in addition.
Okay, thank you. I haven't forgotten you, John. I'm just going around. Bob?
For the reasons that have been well stated before, I do believe that standard setting is necessary. But standard setting is to answer all the questions. But standard setting to answer all those questions and to come up with a framework is going to take time. And we've got a pressing issue in Venezuela. So I could be supportive of an agenda decision on Venezuela that indicates that it is permissible, because I believe there are people out there, I know there are people out there that believe that you have to use an official exchange rate, and it's just, it causes, I think, all kinds of covered the overestimation in the financial statements. I'm not troubled by limiting the agenda decision to Venezuela, because I think any agenda decision we issue is going to be superseded by the standard setting that, maybe I'm being too optimistic, but that's going to be done. And by narrowing it to Venezuela, or at least just the facts of Venezuela, it stops the debates about, you know, what is the framework? When do you go move to estimation? It's just in these limited circumstances. All the other questions about when you move, that'll be answered in the standard setting.
Okay. And you did say, just to pick you up on your specific words, that you're not required, as opposed to the words at the bottom of page 26 and 27.
Not required.
You're careful with your choice of words. Okay, thanks. Andrew.
Right. Let's start with the agenda decision. I think that I would be in favour of releasing an agenda decision, because I think that the market needs some help and it needs it now. On a high level, I wouldn't object to standard setting, but for reasons that others have already articulated, I'm just a little bit concerned that once we got into it, we would get stuck. And that might either end up being something that took an enormously large amount of time, or something where we found that the issues were rather difficult and we really couldn't quite get there. So I'm a little bit wary of standard setting. I think, though, that I wouldn't just restrict it to Venezuela, but I would do it in perhaps a slightly different way from how it's been articulated. And this is based on the premise that in the agenda decision, in the bit inside of closing rate that Mary drew attention to, we talk about what IAS 21 requires. And it requires the use of a closing rate. The difficulty that we face with Venezuela is that we don't have one of those. And the discussion keeps going round in a circle of, what do I do if I don't have something that's defined in IAS 21 as a closing rate? Does IAS 21 tell me to do something or else something, or do I go somewhere else? Well, I think if I can't do what IAS 21 tells me to, I have to go somewhere else, which is right back at the start why I thought I would go into IAS 8. Now, that then takes me down a little bit of a decision tree. First, it is, I would set out in the agenda decision what IAS 21 requires. And then I would ask the question of, do you actually have something which meets the IAS 21 definition of the spot rate or not? If the answer is not, then I think we could quite reasonably say that would then take you into IAS 8. Now, one of the reasons I like that is that when I go into the guidance in that standard, it tells me to do something which is economically meaningful with the accounting. So it tells me to go in there and do something which faithfully represents what I'm trying to represent. And that then helps me, because I can't get a spot rate there, but that can then tell me I really need to think about whether I should estimate a rate. Now, I say that carefully, think about, because I, like others, I don't want to have something that says that then requires you to estimate a rate. But I think that we could quite reasonably say that in the context of the judgments that you would make in IAS 8, an appropriate approach may be to estimate a rate. And that, I think, addresses a point that Sue and others have raised, that we have companies out there who think that the only way to do Venezuela is to do it at the official rate, which doesn't actually represent reality. What we could then do is we could add on a bit at the bottom, rather as we did for one of the IFRS 15 agenda decisions, of here's the analysis of what you do when you're looking at any situation, and then specifically here's how it applies to Venezuela. And what we then do is we address both sides. We address a wider question of here's a thought process for you to go through. We're not going to give you an absolute answer, but here are some judgments you need to make. We can bring out the requirement for certain disclosures that would then be required in order to give clarity for users of financial statements, then apply it to the specific jurisdiction we've been asked about. So I think that's where I'd quite like to go. And I think we could do that pretty quickly. As I said, though, it's standard setting, I wouldn't object to it, but I think we could get into the long grass very quickly.
Can I just address the point, Andrew, because I know you and Bonnie both mentioned IS-8, and at least just to say from our perspective, I don't think you can get to IS-8 in this situation. And I'll just explain why, because the words in IS-8, when you end up getting into the hierarchy, say, in the absence of an IFRS that specifically applies to a transaction, it's not necessarily the words that you use that say there's a requirement there, but somehow, you know, I think I can't just work it out. And to me, it's all about when it specifically applies to a transaction. And to me, IS-21, there is a requirement there. It tells you what to do every time you're translating, you know, a foreign operation into your presentation currency. There are requirements there that tell you to use the closing rate. And because there's no exception in there, I know there's no specific mention of long-term exchangeability, but without any other words or exception, the requirement is in 21 that applies in this situation. So I think you wouldn't come out of 21 and get into IS-8.
I think in relation to that, I absolutely agree. I think my thought process is perhaps slightly different. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. That I think it is IS-21 tells you to get a spot rate. However, I can't get that spot rate in when I look at the guidance in IS-21. So yes, I have to use a spot rate, but I don't think when there is nothing observable that I can see anywhere that meets the definition of a spot rate in 21 that I can do that.
I'm not sure I agree with that, so I'd be keen not to put it in the agenda decision. We can take a debate offline. I'm sure we'll have many hours of interesting debate. Michael?
Just to go back to the beginning and what I've observed and what I've heard. If we're thinking about standard setting, it seems to me that what Jim was saying, that there are lots of circumstances where people make valid judgments in accordance to IS-21, and maybe some of those are there's less exchangeability or whatever they are, but when a standard setting needed is when the standards just don't work and they can't get you to what everybody agrees is a sensible answer. I think that's what I heard all over the table. So, you know, if it can be defined, and to Mary's point, you know, that's for the next meeting scoping, that's the standard setting. It's not to address necessarily the whole spectrum. It's the time where it just doesn't work, perhaps.
John, sorry, you've been waiting patiently.
No, this is my second round. So.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
I mean, I did say initially that I wasn't supportive of an agenda decision, and reflecting, and so you've commented that there are entities out there that consider that they have to use some form of official rate in the absence of it. I mean, I could support an agenda decision which opens the door to different ways of determining that closing rate in the absence of something that meets the requirements of IAS 21. My only problem with that is I think you would have to accept that was available any time you had a long-term lack of exchangeability, because we've already said in 2014 that any long-term lack of exchangeability is not dealt with in 21, and therefore anything we write now, you know, to me, to draw a distinction between extreme and not extreme without actually putting a lot of work into when you cross that boundary, I think you just have to accept that that estimation technique would be available for anyone who had a long-term lack of exchangeability.
Yeah. It's tricky to scope it in an agenda decision, but we could at least set the parameters for the situation we had in mind when we thought that might be the
case.
Young Sue?
I understand that the gender decision is needed for helping the foreign operations in Venezuela. I understand that, and my problem is that estimation is not what we can suggest within IAS 21 because it does not have any characteristics of immediate delivery. So what I suggest is to change some of our gender decision. Instead of recommending of using estimation, maybe you can say something like this, but legal rate is not always a spot rate in an extreme situation. So if we just allow them to use the other spot rate, other rate besides the legal rate, I think we can achieve the objective of the agenda decision.
Okay, thank you. Let me just whisper to Petrina for a second. Reinhardt, did you have anything you wanted to add, or are you happy there?
So I think my comments are consistent with what I think Bob said and John said as well. I do agree with the fact that standard setting would be appropriate. I worry a little bit, as others have said, that we may find that difficult to do in a reasonable amount of time and that we end up with scope creep. But with respect to Venezuela, I agree with the comments that were made that people are looking for guidance. There are people who believe that they need to use the closing rate, and so I would be supportive of an agenda decision that's narrowly focused to Venezuela. I'm somewhat leery to have an agenda decision that provides a framework of analysis based on IAS 21 and then using the Venezuelan situation as an illustration of how it applies or doesn't apply, and therefore, you know, in the circumstance of Venezuela, it would be permissible to use an estimated rate, because I'm just wary of inadvertently opening the door to other circumstances where it may not be appropriate to deviate from the closing rate. And so I think I would be supportive of a very narrowly focused agenda decision relative to Venezuela to provide guidance to companies in those circumstances to a state based on the principles in IAS 21 that in Venezuela it may not be appropriate to use the closing rate.
Okay, thank you. So with all of that, do you want me to have a go kicking off and you can chip in, Petrina? So what I want to try is to see whether we can agree to proceed with a relatively focused agenda decision. And I think that Andrew alluded to what we'd done on IFRS 15, where we talked about the requirements and then sort of applied them to a set of parameters and sort of commented on the application. I wonder if we could do something along those lines, which reminds people that, or points out the fact that IAS 21 requires the use of a closing rate that has these characteristics as set out at the bottom of page 26 and 27. And note that in circumstances like the ones in Venezuela, not naming Venezuela, but pointing out the characteristics that we've got at the front of the agenda decision at the moment at the top, in those circumstances the committee observed that because of the long-term lack of exchangeability and the extreme conditions, that the use of a, I don't know what the word is, official exchange rate would not meet the definition of the closing and spot rate definitions in 21. So focusing on the extreme circumstances, not naming the country to Mary's warning, but still trying to focus in on, we're only talking about the application of those definitions with these particular fact patterns in mind. And then I think the other thing that would be good to cover in the agenda decision, building on some of Sandy's comments, was given the importance of the judgments and the impact on the financial statements, the importance of users of financial statements understanding what's happened in terms of the exchange rate and reminding people of the disclosure requirements as set out in the draft agenda decision, but saying something about the importance of users understanding as a sort of lead into that, and testing whether the committee could agree with an agenda decision along those lines. So we'd be saying that in the situation set out with these ABC type bullet points, we don't think that the definition of a closing rate, spot rate, is met. So not just that it's not required, it's not met. That's what I want to try first. And in addition to that, that we ask the staff to come back at a subsequent meeting with an analysis of whether there is something focused and narrow in scope that could help us establish some parameters for people for how you go about using estimation techniques to find a rate that meets the definitions in 21 as a separate stream of work.
Bruce? Can I say one? So I was just going to say one thing. I quite liked, I think Bob made the suggestion about actually referring this to Venezuela, and I tell you, I would. Having heard the discussion, I think it could avoid any unintended consequences where we have to start going into what John was saying. What is the grade? What is this? I just think it would be a good backstop.
If we go with Venezuela, though, I think it would be very important to say that it's Venezuela, given the circumstances today, right? Because we don't want it to become this is how Venezuela is.
No, I agree. But
and also, that at least then means that if another country comes along that has very similar circumstances in the future, the agenda decision could still be useful.
But providing they are in that extreme situation. Yes. Yeah, that's why I mentioned Venezuela. So
at the moment, Venezuela is the type of situation we're looking at, because I think that would help you with the point out how extreme it is. Now, Mary might have said she objects to that, but Mary?
Well, I'm trying to think about how to incorporate Bruce's and Bob's and Reinhardt's concerns about keeping it specific. And somebody sitting next to me whispering, no, please no. But also getting back to what you were framing, and if I step back and say, committee was asked how an entity applies IS-21 if there is long-term lack of exchangeability and whether it is required to use the official exchange rate, as the basic question. That does not name Venezuela. And then I think picking up in what's on page 26, the first B and C, in this circumstance, the functional currency of foreign operations subject to long-term lack of exchangeability is so extreme. Those two criteria, I would not say it, but I think at least some people here, and maybe you have to take a vote, that committee noted that the situation currently, has developed in Venezuela. I would say you shouldn't do it, but I think more important to describe the generic unusual circumstances first and then think about whether you do or not do not. And I think then against that, remember what that question is, how an entity applies 21 if there's a long-term lack of exchangeability, having described B and C of exchangeability, then you cut down to the committee observed that you translate the results and financial position and then state the closing rate. And I think, Sue, you had said whether or not the committee observes that the official rate doesn't meet that criteria. I think an approach would be to say you have to assess the official rate against those criteria and determine whether it meets those.
Yep.
Rather than say it's mathematical.
Yep. I would very much rather we didn't have a rule.
That's good. Yes. That's better. Yeah, yep. That's a good suggestion.
Sorry.
Stop saying that.
One comment. Is there not clear whether we can issue agenda decision? Because, I'm sorry, this is a very big issue in some country. However, as Andrew suggested, as many others suggested, we need a kind of standard setting.
Okay.
Yeah? However, how can we issue on the current standard if we need a kind of a requirement of revision?
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm sorry. So it's a kind of conflict. These two approaches are conflicting each other. That's what I'm saying.
Let me set out what I'm thinking, and then we need to actually that's a good reminder for me. We need to take a formal vote that we don't think in the first instance we have to do formal standard setting, and then we'll have a secondary question of whether we look at doing something in addition later on. But the way that so usually you're right. We'd sort of be sort of schizophrenic if you like to conclude on one hand we don't need to do standard setting, which is when we end up with an agenda decision, and simultaneously let's look at doing agenda standard setting. So you're right to question it. The reason why I've proposed it is because of particularly the timing issue we have in Venezuela. And I think we can do these two things simultaneously because of the very particular two slightly different things I think we'd be focusing on. One would be saying, in the first instance, reminding people of the definition of the spot rate and the closing rate, and therefore concluding that you need to assess whether, and in these extreme conditions that we've proposed to set out, you have to stop and ask yourself, is the official exchange rate meeting that definition? So we're just reminding people to check that requirement and to remind them what the definitions are in 21. That would be all that what I'm going to ask the committee to vote on. That would be the first decision. We don't need to do standard setting to achieve that clarification. That would be the first thing. And then the second question would be, would it be helpful for us to then go an extra step so that in the future, when people are in the situation where they reach a conclusion they don't have an official exchange rate that meets the definition, we provide them with some more help about how they then go about determining what rate they should use to go through the translation process. So in the first instance, we'd be just talking about the official rate. In the second instance, we'd be saying, should we do something more to help them then find what the alternative rate would be? So that's how I was thinking of them as being slightly different.
So just for confirmation, we are not talking about estimation in the agenda decision at all.
No. But that's my proposal. We'd stay away from that question for now and consider whether we can deal with that in a narrow scope way at a subsequent meeting. So with all of those clarifications, if you can hold all of that in your heads. Now, what I'm going to ask in the first instance is, just to add one more thing on, in the first instance, can we vote on this agenda decision without the express reference to Venezuela? So talking about the circumstances but not mentioning Venezuela specifically. Show of hands on that first. And then secondly, if that doesn't get us a majority, I'll vote on whether you would prefer us to have an explicit reference to the fact that at the time we're making this agenda decision, Venezuela is a country that would meet the type of criteria we're focusing on to Bruce's point in terms of, you know, unintended consequences. So in the first instance, the agenda decision without an explicit reference to Venezuela. Could I have a show of hands, please?
Can you repeat, sorry?
Without
reference. Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so that's not enough. Okay, so people who put their hands up can vote again if they want to. that's not exclusive. The agenda decision, but with Venezuela addition to the agenda decision to make it more specific.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's enough.
Okay, good. And also, just a show of hands for confirmation so I don't make the staff do work they don't need to do. A show of hands for people who, in addition to the agenda decision, which we've already decided on, would like the staff to go away and do a separate stream of work and bring back for the committee an analysis on how we might be able to do some narrow scope standard setting to provide some additional guidance on the estimation process for people who are in that situation. Can I get a show of hands on who would like the staff to do that work?
The staff have not put up their hand. We would love to. It's going to be a delight.
Okay, now the next big decision we need to make, Katrina, is should we have a coffee break now?
Yes.
I feel like we've earned a coffee break.
Okay. This means that Vincent